Please rise.
Good morning. Please be seated. Welcome to the Minnesota Court of Appeals. Sitting in New Ulm, Minnesota on October 3rd, 2019. We are pleased to be here. The next matter on our case for oral argument, or on our calendar for oral argument, is the matter of the welfare of the children of KKH and JCB. Counsel, you will each have 15 minutes to present your arguments. Counsel for appellant, you will have 5 minutes for rebuttal. It's important that you state your name and identify the party you represent, because we are recording these proceedings. And finally, for whatever reason, I did not bring the timing clock along, so we will have to go with low technology, and that is you will see a sign when you're down to 5 minutes, and you will see another sign that the clerk will hold up when you're down to 1 minute, and then there will be a very audible warning when your time is up. So please be mindful of your time. With that, counsel for appellant, you may proceed.
Good morning, Your Honors. My name is Stephen Winkler. I'm attorney for appellant KKH, mother in this matter. And may it please the court. I don't believe it's oversimplifying today to say that we are here because of mother's relationship with the father in this matter, the father being JCB or Mr. Bennett. Ultimately, it's that relationship with mother, the relationship mother had with the father of her children, that led the court to determine that there were conditions to terminate mother's parental rights in this matter. From the court's perspective, that relationship is the essential jumping off point, which there's a series of inferences that form the basis to terminate. This is best seen in finding 136 in the order, in which the court writes that the relationship left no doubt that mother would resume the relationship with father when he was released from prison. Mother will then allow contact between the twins and their father. The twins will be living with a sex offender, and that exposes them to serious future harm. The court found three bases to terminate mother's parental rights. The first that I would like to address is found in 260C.301, subdivision 1B, number 5, and that's reasonable efforts out of home placement to fail to correct the conditions leading to placement. There were actually two placements in this matter. The first one was a result of mom suffering postpartum depression immediately after the birth of the twins. This was in April 2017. The more pertinent one to this matter is June 16, 2017, when it was established that mom had allowed contact between the twins and the fathers by court order, stating that she was not to allow contact at that point.
And the chief's admission that ultimately was offered by your client also referenced mental health concerns that had been an ongoing issue.
That is correct.
So there, that, in fairness, that was another piece of the efforts that the county then made, whether reasonable or not, according to your argument, it included significant services around mental health.
That's absolutely true, yes. And I will touch on those to a greater degree here shortly. But ultimately, it was the contact regarding the relationship, it was the contact with father that led placement. After that, mother did receive unsupervised visits. These were visits that were overnight, Tuesday through Thursday. That began in December of 2017. That both addresses both the mental health issues that the county was concerned about and that mother was to address, but also in relation to the relationship with father. After father was returned to prison, mom received overnights. There was not sufficient concern about her mental health at that point, that it wasn't felt that overnights were not appropriate for mother. Pertinent to the argument now, father being in prison, the court acknowledged, reduced the risk to the twins. In August of 2018, Nicola County Human Services advised the court that the TPR matter should actually be dismissed at that time when it was learned that father would not be released from prison. The TPR was filed on the eve of father's release from prison. That was not going to occur, and Nicola County advised the court that the TPR petition should be dismissed at this time.
And at that point, the children had been out of the home for well over a year.
They had been out of the home.
And they're young children for whom permanency is supposed to be expedited.
That is correct. Yes, they have been out of the home for the year. And there's unsupervised parenting time that also begun at that time. So the children were spending 3 days a week in mother's care. The conditions, however, that resulted in the placement were related to doubt to father's imminent release from prison, which had not occurred. It still has not occurred. Father remains in prison. And the court writes in its order that father may not be released until 2026. So the immediate condition that related to the placement itself was in fact corrected. Father could not have access to the twins anymore, not to them physically, certainly, because he's in prison. We do not know when he's going to be out of prison.
Although he's had access to mother's older child and I think telephone access to the twins, although they're still pretty young, even from within the confines of prison, correct?
We can describe contact and the type of contact that was had. Mother's testimony was that she would be on the phone with father. The children are between the ages of 1 and 2. They're certainly overhearing father's voice. If that constitutes contact in that they have no conception as to what's being said, they're not having, I would say, any meaningful conversation. This is more a necessity of a mother with twin daughters between the ages of 1 and 2 trying to carry on a phone conversation with their father.
But the case plan was broader than just not having contact with the children, correct?
That is correct.
And it also involved completing therapy. I don't think there's any dispute that there was approximately 6 month period of time where mother didn't engage in therapy. And mother also was not consistent in going to the ABC attachment therapy sessions either. So did the district court err in finding that she hadn't completed that part of her case plan?
To say it was an error, I would say that there was a period of time where mother would acknowledge that she was not in treatment. She described it as seeking to change providers regarding her mental health. She was also working two jobs at the time and raising the 10-year-old child that she also had. She had a week on, week off parenting schedule that was not affected by any of these matters. The issue regarding treatment is mother sought treatment preemptively before the birth of the children because she had suffered postpartum depression before. The issues that she was working on initially with the therapist had to do with coping skills, her anxiety, her depression. It becomes apparent in the record that the purpose of those therapy sessions, at least from the county's perspective, changed. Mother managing her mental health and well-being, developing coping skills into, again, this demonstration that she was to provide that the relationship that she continued to have with father was over. The therapist described looking for those, after having contact with the county caseworker, looking for those indications that mom was choosing to terminate her relationship. That became the crux of this. It became the crux of therapy.
Well, didn't Dr. Coble try to fight against that? I mean, this is the therapist that mother selected. Right, and it's Dr. Coble we're talking about?
Yes, that's correct, Doctor.
Right, and I mean, the diagnoses were significant. I mean, they went beyond postpartum depression to, you know, a suspected personality disorder, which we know takes a while to treat, or can it be treated? And didn't Dr. Coble, in fact, try to keep herself out of the county's issues and focus more on mother's perspective?
She perhaps did, but she also testified that she was in contact with the county and that she was being advised that the concern was mother's relationship with father, and that she was in essence tasked with determining whether that relationship had ended. Of note, Dr. Coble also testified that she never disclosed to mom that she felt that she had a personality disorder. That whatever treatment she was providing for her was not related at all to her having a personality disorder. It was not even discussed. It was not even named. So that, I mean, that aspect of her treatment certainly seems to be lacking in the record if the doctor and
other than the doctor's testimony. But I mean, the doctor testified as to the diagnosis, right?
She did testify, but she also testified that she didn't tell mother that that's what she suffered from, or that was an issue.
What difference does that make?
I would think that you would need to at least provide a name to the issue that you're trying to treat. If this is something where, mother, you have a personality disorder that might be affecting your relationship or the way you view this relationship with father, that, I mean, to me, that is something that needs to be directly addressed. And mother needs to be aware that she might have these mental health issues that are affecting her relationship. According to Dr. Coble, she does not even provide that description to mother. I obviously, not being in the room with the therapist, but it is difficult to understand how that therapeutic relationship evolves substantially to be able to treat a personality disorder when one of the parties is not even aware. So again, returning to the question that was initially asked, yes, mother did seek a new therapist, and by the time of trial had re-engaged in therapy. She did miss sessions at ABC as well. She had indicated that she had work-related issues. A substantial period of this period, she was working two jobs, both for St. Peter school system as a paraprofessional, now it escapes me, her second job that she was working at the time. But again, going back to the other reasons that the court found as sufficient to terminate her parental rights, the care and control that she was providing to the children, and whether she was palpably unfit. Again, there's no proof that the twins were wanting for food, for clothes, for shelter, for education. Mother remained in an apartment. She'd been in the same apartment for 6 years. She was employed throughout that time. At the time of trial, she was receiving some food support, but not receiving any other county benefits. There's no real demonstration that the children were suffering in her care in any direct way. What remains is whether mother was palpably unfit. And again, that relates back to the relationship she had with father, and essentially, was she allowing contact with an abusive adult?
Well, and also go ahead.
I mean, you're correct that in your brief you argued that the case plan didn't require mother to end her relationship with father. But I think the court's concern was deeper than that. It was about a concern that mother didn't recognize that the safety risk posed by father as an untreated sex offender. And so how are the court's findings in that regard clearly erroneous?
What I would say is there's not, there from on the court side as well, there is also not analysis as to the risk that father poses to the children. There's nothing in the record that says or suggests that father actually abused children. Father committed
but
a crime in 2013.
Do you have to find abuse of a child to find that the parent poses a risk to the child?
I certainly think that that contributes to the amount of risk that father may have posed to the twins. The other factors, however, when was he going to be released? Could he have been civilly committed before his release? What is the actual likelihood of recidivism? What is his victim pool? I mean, he offended against a prepubescent child, not infants. He didn't abuse.
Yeah, but these girls, when he gets out, will be prepubescent girls, right?
At some point they will, certainly. Whether mother is still in a relationship with him at the time of his release, he has never victimized family members. I mean, I am forced to accept that mother was certainly viewed father through a different lens than the county did. To mother, it was the father of her children who also committed a sex offense in 2013. Clearly, from the county's perspective, he was a sex offender that happened to father twin girls.
Doesn't she also deny that he committed the sexual offense?
She is on both sides of that argument, depending on when you're asking her but yes.
Was the district court off base or wrong in considering mother's history, to use that word broadly, of being dishonest with the county, with her therapist, about her ongoing relationship with father?
I would say that that is a concern, whether that rises to the level of creating a condition that necessitates the termination of a parental right? I think that is another question. You know, the question as to whether she had allowed contact with an abusive adult, case law is limited in this, but if you're looking at, you know, like cite to the children of TA, that was a circumstance where mother knew that the children were being abused by a particular person and at that point still did not restrict contact or prevent contact. I mean, this is a circumstance where there has not been actual abuse between father and children. There's certainly a potential of abuse. The fact that he offended against a girl in the past certainly would raise his the potential of being abusive to the girls above baseline, what you would expect from a person who had not committed a crime like that. But again, the abuse had not occurred. And it is, there are too many other factors that could present themselves prior to father actually having contact with the children that necessitates or raises this to the level of where mother's parental rights needed to be terminated at this time. Certainly, mother had no control whatsoever regarding the amount of time that the children had been out of home. But again, she was parenting the children for half the week all the way up until that first day of trial. So it was not like she had been completely excluded from the children. And again, that's unsupervised contact. This is overnight. So whatever other issues that she may need to address with mental health, they were not sufficient to have restricted her parenting time during the duration of this matter. With that, I thank you for your time today.
You will have 5 minutes for rebuttal. Counsel for respondent.
May it please the court, Michelle Zunder Fisher, Mifflin County Attorney, representing the respondent, Mifflin County Health and Human Services. I ask you today to affirm the district court's order terminating the parental rights of mother and father to the twin girls at issue in this case, to provide them with the safety and permanency that the statutes are directed, are directing trial courts to impose for very young children and for all children appealing to child protection matters. These twin girls were newborns when this case started, and they are now 2.5 years old. They have resided in foster care for the bulk of their childhood. Their father is a convicted sex offender who has demonstrated time and again that he can't be trusted to follow the rules upon release. The district court made specific findings about father's risk to these children at finding 50 on page 12 of the appendix, appellant appendix, making specific findings about how he posed a risk. It was more, it transcended the fact that he was a sex offender, but it looked at the fact that he failed to complete sex offender treatment, that he didn't follow conditions of release, and that he violated multiple rules while in the correctional facility as well. Their mother was an individual who, despite overwhelming evidence that this individual posed a risk, despite multiple efforts by individuals working with her, including the district court, that maintaining a relationship with the father would end her relationship with the twins, chose to continue that relationship up and through the week of trial. The phone contact between mother and father, including the week of child, continue to record their conversation, referring to each other as husband and wife, engaging in sex talk, and talking about their future.
Well, to be fair to mother, the case plan talked about limiting contact between the twins and father. There wasn't, and I know that mother was given repeated messages about her relationship, but there was no requirement that she end her relationship with father. So how can the district court hang onto that as a basis for terminating parental rights when it was never a condition or part of her case plan?
The case plan required that mother demonstrate an ability to have a safe and stable home for the children. It also required them her to demonstrate an understanding of the potential threat that father posed to the children. That's the, if you look at the case plans and the specific page references are cited in my brief, the overriding obligation of mom is to provide that safety with those pieces. And then underneath that, it talked about specific, very specific things, which included the no contact between the children and the father. That was then supplemented with the court's directive and clear indication that from the court, the trial court's perspective, to meet that safety factor, she was going to have to demonstrate an end of that relationship, because her level of commitment to the father demonstrated that even if she was maintaining some contact, for example, with father, but recognized his risk to the children, that would be potentially be very different set of facts facing this court than what we have here. She never endorsed the fact that he was a risk to her children. She never, she waffled on whether she believed him to be guilty, but she never endorsed his guilt. She acknowledged other people believed he was guilty and other people believed he shouldn't have contact, but she herself never did.
Let's talk about the timing. The TPR petition is filed in the summer of 2018, and I think the county, because then there was a change in father's anticipated release date, and the county said, we can withdraw this petition or it should be dismissed now. So there was some sense the county had as recently as a year and 3 months ago that mother was making enough progress and was having overnights with the children so that it made sense to continue to work with her. And now I understand that there, at the time of trial, there is no definite date, and in fact, father may not be released till 2026. Why the hurry?
I think there's two factors. The first is that it goes to the obligation to provide permanency and the up and down nature that we experience during the course of this case because of father's moving target about what his release date and what that meant, the potential risk to the twins. The other piece of that, when we made the request to withdraw our petition, is the amount of evidence that the county felt it had to proceed with the termination. What evidence that I had to put before the district court and that I looked at standing before you on the evidence we had at the time was our belief that she was still committed to that relationship and our suspicion and belief that she was probably still having some form of contact with father. But we didn't have documented proof at the time of trial. We had overwhelming proof that she was having ongoing contact with father, that she was allowing the twins to have ongoing contact with father during her unsupervised parenting time. And I would,
By being in the area where she was on the phone?
I don't recall that description. I'm not saying that it's not there in the transcript. Mom admitted that she allowed phone contact between the twins and father. It wasn't.
How old were the twins at this point, though? They're young.
They're young.
So what does it mean she allowed them to have phone contact?
He talks about in some of the emails about hearing their voice and them babbling to him. And so I think it was direct contact and direct attempts to have that contact. But I think perhaps the most telling way the court can look at past behavior to look at future conduct is the amount of contact that she was allowing between father and her older child. Those phone conversations were not just between father and that child. They were inclusive. They talked about things. They talked about going to Chuck E. Cheese when father got out of prison. They talked about her encouraging that child to call him daddy, and that he was a wonderful role model for this child. And the fact that she was also allowing direct physical contact between that child and father on multiple occasions before he went to prison this most recent time. And then plus the contact after the twins were born, he talks about the fact that father was having contact with the twins and with mother. And so we have evidence that if father gets out, mother will allow that contact to occur because she's committed to that relationship. She's already violated court orders. As the court inquired of appellant's counsel, we can't trust that she's going to tell us the truth about what her contact is.
How about appellant's point that mother might not be in a relationship with father by the time he gets out?
And I think that goes to the requirement of statute that we look at permanency, and at some point, there is a timeline. We've already exceeded the timelines for these twins. And we've exceeded the timelines because of that uncertainty, and it's now time to look at the totality of the evidence that the district court had about mom's continued commitment to this relationship and make the decision that we're not going to continue to make these twins live in uncertainty. Because as they get older, they're certainly going to understand that uncertainty. And the bigger risk that the court identified is that right now, they're in the same foster home that they've been in since that second removal. If we reunite them and he's released in a year, or he's released and we have to remove them again, generally speaking, there's certainty that that foster home isn't going to be available to these children again, because they have other children, or they've decided, because of the, quite frankly, hardship of having the children with them since birth and having those children return, that they're not willing to open themselves up again to that risk. But I think the court recognized that that was a risk to these children. And at this point in time, these twins deserve permanency, and mom has demonstrated over and over and over again that father is more important than these twins, or than her relationship with the twins. We talk a little bit about the reasonable efforts. Appellant didn't argue before the trial court and didn't argue in brief what additional efforts the county could have offered mother to rectify the circumstances that led to the filing of the CHIPS and the out-of-home placement. And I want to start with perhaps reframing a bit mom's mental health issues. They transcended the postpartum depression. They were severe depression. And if you look at Dr. Coble's notes, her anxiety and depression and being overwhelmed centered around her being ingrained in father's issues. She certainly had stress and anxiety from the fact that she was going, looking at parenting an older child and twins, but Dr. Coble's notes are full of reference to mom's fixation about how dad was being mistreated by the system. And so she had that interconnection, and the ability to address that mental health concern diminished once father went back to prison, but then again raised itself when she stopped going to therapy during the course, the latter part of 2018, without permission, and really didn't re-engage until I believe it was the week before trial. So the reasonable efforts that the county attempted were the mental health intervention, the no contact, the financial support, the case management services, the ABC therapy. All of the services that the county imposed were not required to offer exhaustive services, but reasonable services. And I submit that any fault of reasonable efforts that was noted in the brief is directly tied to mom's failure to be honest with the providers. We can offer a million services to parents, but if they're not willing to be honest in those providers and address the issues that got us there, those services aren't going to be effective, and we can't gauge that, or we can't change that attitude of the parent that we're working with. And honesty is critical to providing those services. So from the county's perspective, and the court found that the services offered to mother were reasonable, and that the conditions that led to the filing of the petition had not been corrected. And the county's concern with respect to those conditions really came to fruition, and the evidence established that, is that number one, mom's mental health concerns hadn't been rectified because she still was experiencing depression. She had a long-term history of depression, both with after the birth of her first child and now twins, centered as well around father's issues. She's had other involvement with Child Protective Services. She was charged with, endangerment or neglect for leaving her child alone in the car the older child. She had child protection involvement when she slapped him as an infant across the face. So she's not, this case doesn't just center around that contact. Mom's performance on the case plan we're not requiring stellar compliance, but there were certainly other issues besides her contact and relationship with father that gave us cause and concern. But the issues that really became concerning is the fact that if we say we're not going to terminate, we're not going to offer that permanency to these children, is we don't have a litmus test for honesty. And how are we going to know about that contact until the harm is done? And this court and district courts don't have to wait until there's actual harm. We have that in father's documented history of being a sex offender and mom's documented history of not recognizing the harm that father, or the risk of harm that the father poses to these twins. And the county would respectfully ask the court to affirm the trial court's decision in this matter. If there's any other questions.
Any questions? Thank you.
Thank you.
Mr. Winkler, you have the last word.
The phrase that is used repeatedly in respondent's brief is, and in the court's order, is that mom would put her needs and her desire for the relationship ahead of the needs of the children. And I have a hard time understanding the definition of that. I mean, clearly that relationship was important to her, but she's also discussing the hopes of having a united family, of the potential that the children could be raised with a father. Certainly is not an unreasonable hope for a mother, is certainly prior to the TPR. The court does not also acknowledge that, or the court did acknowledge that mother clearly has affection for the children, that there's clearly a bond between the two of them. There's no sign that mother neglected the twins in any way. There's observations of positive interaction.
Wasn't there some indication, I think when the father was out on probation or parole, that financial resources were being directed to him and not to the children? Wouldn't that be some indication of neglect?
That could be, but also it could be looked at if there is some hope at that point still of unifying as a family at some point. And mother made it clear in her testimony that that would require that father had completed sex offender treatment before there would be any notion of a unified household between them. But still holding that out, it's not unreasonable to be supportive of your children and to the father of that of your children at the same time. Again, there was observations of positive interactions from therapists, other persons involved in the case between mom and the children. Mother completed a parenting eval that did not demonstrate any high-risk concerns regarding her parenting. This isn't a case where there's drugs or alcohol involved. And again, it could be considered that having a potential relationship in the future is somehow also beneficial for the children and not just mother. Regarding mother's 10-year-old child and the contact that he had, he was not part of the CHIPS or TPR. There was no restriction placed upon mom regarding contact.
Isn't there a reference in the district court's order to the fact that that older child may soon be the subject of a child protection matter?
And I believe he very well might be at this time. But at the time, he certainly was not. There was no restriction placed upon mom regarding any contact between the two of them. There very well might have been dead at that time. But regarding mother's mental health issues, it's both acknowledged that personality disorders are slow to be treated. It's something that requires a substantial amount of treatment. The expectation that that would be resolved during the case, as the county has just advised, that would be an expectation of mother's reunification with the children, could not really be expected. I mean, this is something that she is going to be dealing with for a substantial period of time.
Isn't that why her failure to continue with treatment, that she left treatment against Dr. Coble's recommendation? I mean, isn't that why that's a critical fact to the district court, that she left treatment? Because she's going to need it for a while.
And as she testified in trial, she was seeking to change providers and did change providers and had re-entered treatment. I would say that the record demonstrates that the mother had been very proactive about her mental health issues both prior to the birth of the children and continued to be involved in those efforts after. The tenor of those therapy sessions certainly changed when the county became involved with it, but she had been very proactive regarding her mental health prior to the birth of the children and continues to be involved in her mental health issues. So again, what we're looking at here is whether there a condition existed at the time that would require termination here. The issues regarding father are resolved for the time being because he continues to remain in prison. We do not know when he will be released.
Find that even though he's still in prison, he's had an impact on mother and others. So just because he's in prison doesn't necessarily mean that the issue's been resolved or for the time being.
Yes. The reason the children were removed from the home was because they had contact with him, though. Not because mother had a relationship with father, or that father may be having some extant impact on mother's life because she continues to be involved with him, but because he had contact with the children. And he's not having physical contact with the children currently. We do not know when he potentially could have contact with the children again. If there are no further questions, we would ask that the trial court's order be reversed and that this family be reunited, or that the children and mother be reunited. Thank you for your time.
Thank you. Thank you both for your helpful arguments. Take the matter under advisement and issue our decision within the statutory period.